don't you know? We're talking about a revolution. Sounds like a whisper. Don't you know? We're talking about a revolution. Sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines.
Freedom Bound, a decade of radio without barriers.
Wasting time in the unemployment lines. Sitting around, waiting for a promotion. Don't you know?
Hi, this is Tony here. Here for another week of Freedom Bound. Of course, I've got my trusty partner, Dave, with us.
Greetings, world.
And we've got a new partner, but I won't introduce him yet. We just thought we'd start off by talking about an article that was in last week's Sydney Morning Herald last Thursday, written by Lyndon Barber. He's the film critic, and it's just about the disabled movies at the moment going around town. And a man that needs no absolute introduction, take it away.
Crippling disability, one can't help noticing, is big in Hollywood this year, with two of the five Oscar-nominated male actors taking to the wheelchair. In Born on the 4th of July, Tom Cruise goes into hyper-emotive mode as Ron Kovich, the Vietnam veteran paralysed from the waist down. Meanwhile, the low-budget My Left Foot, directed by Irishman Jim Sheridan, has won bucket loads of accolades and big audiences for British actor Daniel Day-Lewis's portrayal of the cerebral palsy-stricken Irish writer Christy Brown. Coincidence? Only last year, Dustin Hoffman took out the Best Acting Oscar for his portrayal of an autistic savant in Rain Man. And genuinely deaf, Marley Matlin won an Oscar for her performance in 1986's Children of a Lesser God. Let's not forget Mickey Rourke's recent role as a cheap crook who starts out in the thriller Johnny Handsome with a potato head either. Or Chris Haywood's Greek deaf mute in Paul Cox's Island last year. Or Colin Firth as a crippled soldier in the British TV Falklands drama Tumbledown, recently repeated on ABC TV. Maybe the current popularity of these films represents a subconscious reaction against the body culture of the 80s and its notion that physical perfection is not only desirable but attainable for all. But do they seriously prick consciences, heighten appreciation of the problems of the physically and psychiatrically impaired? Or do they merely massage audiences with warm feelings that evaporate after leaving the cinema? My Left Foot is an enjoyable film, but has had its flaws, concentrated in the first half, have been conveniently overlooked in the flood of critical hyperbole, symptomatic of the opening shot in Day-Lewis's lifting a record with his foot and placing it on a turntable, a circuit act that turns him into a kind of performing dog. Day-Lewis works overtime at eliciting the audience's sympathy. Clever, maybe, but it's one of those performances where the actor's dedication is thrust in your face. You're never allowed to forget that he's acting. While the brilliance of Christy Brown's writing lay in his lyrical languages and the vividness of his interior world, none of this is glimpsed at first. It's only possible to relate to Brown through his disability. We can only feel sorry for him. Later, Brown learns to speak, and his salty Irish wit floods out. Here, it's his mind that keeps us spellbound, not Day-Lewis's twitching. We are given the option of finding fault with him. He becomes a rounded person, not merely a vessel for our pity. Day-Lewis's style of acting fits the demands of the invalid hero like a glove. For are not some of these star roles simply vehicles for an actor's extravagant ego trip? His, it's invariably his, grab for the stars, for fame, the big accolades. No matter that sentimentality isn't necessarily intended, there's nothing like a man with an impediment loudly conquering all obstacles against insurmountable odds as an obvious route to moving an audience. Legend has it that Gary Cooper played the role of ex-sheriff Will Kane in a state of agony due to a hip injury, and there's little question the strain added to the memorably tortured nature of the performance. Ask not how well a healthy actor can play an injured character, ask what an injured character can bring to his or her role. Maybe those representatives of the cerebral palsy who criticised Day-Lewis for hogging the plum role of Christy Brown instead of giving it to a real palsy victim were right. Why aren't there more disabled actors in films? Are star names really for audiences to take? The invalided seriously? Marley Matlin hardly did Children of a Lesser God any harm. Instead of more pyrotechnics, more feathers in the caps of career-conscious fests, can't we have more films which accept individuals as ordinary, albeit disadvantaged members of society? Instead of getting all guilty and embarrassed, can't we respect them as flawed human beings, like everybody else?
That was Lucinda Williams with Passionate Kisses. And before that, you were listening to an article by Lynn and Barbara, as I said before, from the Sydney Morning Herald, about disabled actors and portraying disabled actors. And I just agree with that article totally by saying that I think maybe there should be some more disabled actors around. I don't really know if there are any or any places, acting schools, that have that, but it's a thought, something to think of in the future. I think Maybe some of these movies or directors or whatever should be looking for the disabled people to fill these roles.
Yeah, it's definitely food for thought, because I don't really think that able bodies can truly appreciate what the disabled people are going through. And
I think it'd be a lot more natural, I'd say, if as long as that disabled person, of course, can meet the criteria of an actor.
To be or not to be, sort of stuff.
Exactly.
There's no reason why we can't.
And now we cross to Freedom Bound intrepid cub reporter Tiger Jones for an on-the-spot update.
Today I'm here talking to Normal Persiol. Say hello, Norm.
Hi.
So, Norm, tell us exactly what you have wrong with you.
Well, nothing really.
Nothing? No missing limbs?
No.
Not confined to a wheelchair?
No.
No speech impediments?
No.
No brain damage?
No.
No congenital disorders?
No.
Psychiatric problems?
No.
Nothing hereditary?
No.
Eyesight diminished?
No.
What about a slight heart disorder?
No. I can't say there's anything wrong with me. Actually, I did have a migraine the other week.
A bloody headache? I'm talking chronic conditions, support services, surgical supplies, accessibility, acceptability, and you're whinging about a bloody headache? So the fact remains, you have no disabilities whatsoever.
No.
So what the hell are you doing on this show? This is Freedom Bound, radio without barriers.
I'm the maintenance man. I've come to fix the window.
Oh yeah. It's that window over there. Well, that was Normal Percion, our maintenance man. The man with nothing wrong with him. Well, back to the studio.
Good work, Tiger, and we'll be hearing more from him in further broadcasts. And don't forget, coming up later, we have the Spasm Settler.
Yes, the Spasm Settlers. I hope all you Lyrosal freaks and Valium users will get great benefit out of that little piece. Anyway, we've been talking about acting and drama and things like that, and in Sydney, I know that the community arts field, acting and drama is quite important there. And there's actually happening something tonight at the Marrickville Community Centre. There's a program of about 8 weeks, and there's dance and there's movement, and it's being run by Accessible Arts, and it's mainly for intellectually impaired adults, but anyone can come, and that's quite a new thing that's happening.
Sounds good. Okay, we might just hit with another Lucinda Williams single. This time it's Change the Locks. And don't forget, just before we play that single, got the Spasm Settler coming up, so all you spasmed out freaks, stay tuned for that.
Come
was Lucinda Williams, as I said before, great at the Bridge Hotel. Now we've got a little short story for you by Kurt Vonnegut. This is part one of it, and we'll put it on now for you. Oh, I might just mention the spasm set last. Stay tuned for it as well. Okay, away we go.
Harrison Bergeon. A short story by Kurt Vonnegut. The year was 2081, and everybody was finally equal. They weren't only equal before God and the law, they were equal every which way. Nobody was smarter than anybody else. Nobody was better looking than anybody else. Nobody was stronger or quicker than anybody else. All this equality was due to the 211th, 212th, and the 213th Amendments to the Constitution and to the unceasing vigilance of agents of the United States Handicapper General. Some things about living still weren't quite right, though. April, for instance, still drove people crazy by not being springtime, and it was in that clammy month that the HG men took George and Hazel Bergeon's 14-year-old son, Harrison, away. It was tragic, all right, but George and Hazel couldn't think about it very hard. Hazel had a perfectly average intelligence, which meant she couldn't think about anything except in short bursts. And George, while his intelligence was way above normal, had a little mental handicap radio in his ear. He was required by law to wear it at all times. It was tuned to a government transmitter. Every 20 seconds or so, the transmitter would send out some sharp noise to keep people like George from taking unfair advantage of their brains. George and Hazel were watching television. There were tears on Hazel's cheeks, but she had forgotten for a moment what they were about. On the television screen were ballerinas. A buzzer sounded in George's head. His thoughts fled in panic, like bandits from a burglar alarm. "That was a real pretty dance, that dance they just did," said Hazel. "Huh?" said George. "That dance, it was nice," said Hazel. "Yep," said George. He tried to think a little about the ballerinas. They weren't really very good. No better than anybody else would have been anyway. They were burdened with sash weights and bags of birdshot, and their faces were masked so that no one seeing a free and graceful gesture or a pretty face would feel like something the cat dragged in. George was toying with the vague notion that maybe dancers shouldn't be handicapped, but he didn't get very far before another noise in his ear scattered his thoughts. George winced. So did two out of the eight ballerinas. Hazel saw him wince. Having no mental handicap herself, she had to ask George what the latest sound had been. "Sounded like somebody hitting a milk bottle with a sledgehammer," said George. "I'd like to think it would be real interesting hearing all the different sounds," said Hazel, a little envious. "All the things they think up." Said George. "Only if I was Handicapper General. You know what I would do?" said Hazel. Hazel, as a matter of fact, bore a strong resemblance to the Handicapper General, a woman named Diana Moon Glappers. "If I was Diana Moon Glappers," said Hazel, "I'd have chimes on Sunday. Just chimes. Kind of in honour of religion."
Hi, it's me, and just a quick reminder that shortly we've got the Spasm Settlers coming in, so... coming up, so all you sufferers of spasm and wheelies, just stay tuned. Now, back to the action.
"I could think, if it was just chimes," said George. "Well, maybe make them real loud," said Hazel. "I think I'd make a good Handicapper General. Good as anybody else," said George. "Who knows? Better than I do what normal is," said Hazel. "Right," said George. He began to think gloomily about his abnormal son, who was now in jail, about Harrison, but a 21-gun salute in his head stopped that. "Boy," said Hazel, "that was a doozy, wasn't it?" It was such a doozy that George was white and trembling, and tears stood on the rims of his red eyes. Two of the eight ballerinas had collapsed to the studio floor and were holding their temples. "All of a sudden, you look so tired," said Hazel. "Why don't you stretch out on the sofa so that you can rest your handicap bag on the pillows, honey bunch?" She was referring to the 47 pounds of birdshot in a canvas bag, which was padlocked around George's neck. "Go on and rest the bag for a little while," she said. "I don't care if you're not equal to me for a while." George weighed the bag with his hands. "I don't mind it," he said. "I don't notice it anymore. It's just a part of me." "You've been so tired lately, kind of worn out," said Hazel. "If there was just some way we could make a little hole in the bottom of the bag and just take a few of them lead balls out, just a few. 2 years in prison and $2,000 fine for every ball I took out," said George. "I don't call that a bargain." "If you could just take a few of them out when you come home from work," said Hazel. "I mean, you don't compete with anyone around here. You just sit around." "If I tried to get away with it," said George, "then other people would get away with it, and pretty soon we'd be right back to the Dark Ages again, with everybody competing against everybody else. You wouldn't like that, would you?" "I'd hate it," said Hazel. "There you are," said George. "The minute people start cheating on laws, what do you think happens to society?" If Hazel had been able to come up with an answer to his question, George couldn't have supplied one. A siren was going off in his head. "Reckon it'd fall all apart," said Hazel. "What would?" said George blankly. "Society," said Hazel uncertainly. "Wasn't that what you just said?" "Who knows?" said George. The television program was suddenly interrupted for a news bulletin. It wasn't clear at first as to what the bulletin was about, since the announcer, like all announcers, had a serious speech impediment. For about half a minute, in a state of high excitement, the announcer tried to say, "Ladies and gentlemen." He finally gave up and handed the bulletin to a ballerina to read. "That's all right," Hazel said to the announcer. "He tried. That's the big thing. He tried to do the best he could with what God gave him. He should get a nice rise for trying hard." "Ladies and gentlemen," said the ballerina, reading the bulletin. She must have been extraordinarily beautiful, because the mask she wore was hideous, and it was easy to see that she was the strongest and most graceful of all the dancers, for her handicap bags were as big as those worn by 200-pound men. And she had to apologize at once for her voice, which was a very unfair voice for a woman to use. Her voice was a warm, luminous, timeless melody. "Excuse me," she said, and she began again, making her voice absolutely uncompetitive.
Okay, stay tuned next week for the thrilling conclusion of Kurt Vonnegut. Okay, it's the moment you've all been waiting for, you spasm sufferers. It's the spasm settler.
Yes, you've been taking pills 4 times a day. Now it's unnecessary.
Yes, okay, so chuck away those Valium, give those Lorazol back to your nurses. Here we go, you spasm settler. Okay, hope you're all calm and relaxed now. That's it, just about it, from Tony, Dave, and
the man who needs no introduction for this week. We'll be back next week, of course. So until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution, it sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution, it sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution, it sounds dismal. Who are people gonna rise up and get their share? Who are people gonna rise up and take what's theirs? Don't you know you better run, 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 run. But a revolution, it's finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution, oh no. Talking about a revolution, oh, while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution, it sounds like a whisper. And finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution, oh no. Talking about a revolution, oh no. Talking about a revolution.